This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to another episode of Echoes of Dissent, a weekly podcast that explores the events, the movements, the beliefs, and the personalities. In short, the why a song of protest, a song of dissent was written and sung, and who created it. We look at its impact at the time and its relevance to today, if any. My name is Frank Carter, and last year in 54 countries, some of the freedoms that we take for granted in New Zealand were being lost. Across the world, voting was getting harder. Public broadcasting and newspapers were under threat. Minorities were becoming increasingly vilified, and peaceful protest was being violently shut down. There could be a knock at the door because you wrote a letter to the editor. This, sadly, is the trend for civil rights that we take for granted. The trend has been drifting back across the world for the last 20 years. Today, we check out some of these trends and across the world in half a dozen different countries. But we also check out how New Zealand is doing and find two, maybe three election policies. Well, our election is coming up in November and people are already unraveling some of their policies. We find three election policies from a major political party that is likely to be part of the government, irrespective of who wins, three election policies that are often seen as the beginning of the slippery slope backwards. Our song today is written nearly 50 years ago for Les Miserables, a musical about a brief failed French Revolution nearly 200 years ago. It fits the loss of human rights that we're seeing across the world. Since 1980, this anthem has been taken up by attempted revolutions across the world, all but one of which have failed so far. So today we look at Belarus, Turkey, Thailand, Hong Kong, and the one possibly bright light, Hungary. And so here is our song.
Do you hear the people singing the song of angry men? It is the music of a people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a life about to start when tomorrow comes. Will you join in our crusade? Who will be strong and stand with me? Beyond the barricade, is there a world you long to see?
Then join in the fight that will give you the right to be free.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men? This is the music of the people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a life about to start when tomorrow comes. Will you give all you can give so that a banner may advance? Some will fall and some will live. Will you stand up and take your chance? The blood of the martyrs will water the meadows of France. Will you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men? This is the music of the people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a light about to start when tomorrow comes.
Away the sword, the chain will be broken and all men will
Do you hear the people sing as the rebellion anthem from Les Miserables? In the show, it's sung by students preparing to man the barricades. It's about the French June rebellion of 1832, a doomed one-day uprising in Paris after the funeral of a popular general, Jean-Maximilien Lamarque. When a few thousand people threw up barricades in the streets and were crushed by an army many times their size before the next morning. A total, complete failure at the time. Victor Hugo saw it happen. He was 30 years old, out walking, and followed the sound of gunfire into the middle of it. 30 years later, he turned it into Les Miserables. Yes, it was a violent demonstration, like a boil bursting, because people were angry at what was happening in their lives and in their country. They were angry. And what they were angry about seems to ring so many bells today. They were angry about voting restrictions, the right to vote. The working class were being completely shut out of voting. They were angry about inflation, the cost of basic food items, especially bread, which had skyrocketed out of the reach for the poor. They were angry about unemployment. The economic depression caused widespread job losses, leading to intense anger among urban labourers. Then on top of that, there was the 1832 cholera epidemic, a devastating death toll. In Paris alone, there was 19,000 people died of cholera in 1832. And class resentment, of course. The disease hit the overcrowded, impoverished slums, as illnesses and diseases tend to, the hardest, fueling rumours that the government was intentionally poisoning public wells to eliminate the poor. Now, rumours, of course, have little base, in fact, as we know now, from social media. But they are strong, and they travel like wildfire. The catalyst for the revolution, or this rebellion, was the death of General Jean-Maximilien Lamarque, who was a popular Neapolitan war veteran and a member of parliament who fiercely advocated for the working class. The spark was he died of cholera. In 1832, they were protesting against oppression of the poor, high-level corruption, limited voting rights, limited or nil access to health and well-being care, rampant poverty, unfair distribution of wealth. And in short, people wanted to be treated as equals. In 1832, nearly 200 years ago, these issues sound all too familiar to us today. Now, this next verse is Fueli's verse. It's a cry from the only working class voice that's in Les Mis. That verse is the one that always stops me. The moment the song stops being about one street in Paris 200 years ago and starts being about everyone who is still waiting everywhere. Will you give all you can give so that our banner may advance? So some will fall and some will live. Will you stand up and take your chance? The blood of the martyrs will water the meadows of France. Here's the strange afterlife of this song. It escaped the West End and Broadway entirely and became a genuine, real-world protest over and over again on every continent. So let's take it across the world to Ukraine 12 years ago, before the current invasion by Russia. In the Ukraine in 2013-2014, protesters sang it, occupying Kiev's Independence Square in the winter of 2013 and 14, after their president tore up a trade deal with the European Union in favour of Moscow. That protest actually worked in the short term. The president fled the country within months, but the price was steep. Russia came in and annexed the Crimea within weeks, and the war that followed in the east has never really ended before the attack in 2022 and the ongoing devastation. The highly respected Freedom House annual survey of key civil rights measures gave the Ukraine a partly free rating throughout the war that's the current war. Though the Russian-occupied slice of its own territory is now scored quite separately and is at close to nothing at all. And so to Turkey.
Will you join in our crusade? Will we be strong and stand with thee? Somewhere beyond the barricades?
in Turkey again in 2013. In Istanbul, it turned up at the Gezi Park protests, which started as a fight to stop a park being bulldozed for a shopping mall. That sounds so familiar. And somehow in New Zealand, we tend to manage protests like that and disagreements like that. And the parks usually survive. But in Turkey, it grew into a broader stand against Erdogan's government. They saved the park, but they didn't save much else. Erdogan's grip on the country has only tightened since that time. And Turkey has been rated not free on the Freedom House's scorecard every year since 2018. And it's sliding down, sliding down. And so we move to Belarus. In Belarus, students at Minsk University sang it in their own college library in 2020 after Lukashenko's openly rigged re-election. Here we have voting rights issues. Not uncommon, sadly, and not uncommon across the world and in some of our closest friends. So the students were protesting about basically the rigged election, and they were detained mid-song. It didn't take long for the police, the army, or whoever, the secret service, to come in and stop. No happy ending there either. The crackdown held. Lukashenko still in power, and most of the opposition leadership is now in exile. Although recently does seem to be warming towards Ukraine and Europe rather than total support of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But geopolitics, who knows which way the wind is going. Sadly, Belarus still sits amongst the very worst scored countries on the planet on Freedom House's scorecard and has done for years. There's essentially nowhere else for this to go, but it can't go any further down. Now, moving eastwards, protesters in Thailand.
Join in the fight that will give you the right to be free.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song?
In Thailand, protesters in 2020 again sang it at the Democracy Monument in Bangkok, calling for constitutional reform and, very riskily, reform of the monarchy itself. And that was a step too far. The courts ruled that the second demand was illegal, completely illegal, and protest leaders were hit with sentences running into decades, and the movement was effectively shut down within 2 years. Thailand's scorecard on the Freedom House assessment tells the rest of the story. It held partly free status for years, so it was going, beginning to get there after the protests, but for years after the protests, then dropped all the way to not free in 2025. Why? Because the courts dissolved the very party that had actually won the most votes in the 2023 election, not free. The protest so far has not been successful. And then we go most visibly of all, Hong Kong. Perhaps the visibility is a reflection of the geopolitical contest between USA, China, and Russia. But in 2019, these words and this song. Sung night after night, including inside the airport itself during the sit-ins there, when 2 million people, more than a quarter of the entire population, marched against a proposed law that would have let Beijing extradite Hong Kong residents to the mainland. The government did, in the end, withdraw that specific extradition bill, a genuine, if narrow, win. But sadly, the broader story since has run the other way. Beijing has imposed a sweeping national security law in 2020, and it's since been used to prosecute almost everyone associated with the pro-democracy movement. Only around 1 in 100 people charged under it has ever been fully acquitted. The most prominent case is Jimmy Lai, the 78-year-old founder of the pro-democracy newspaper. So how often do we hear regimes who want to shut down freedoms attacking the newspapers, attacking the radio stations? Jimmy Lai, he founded Apple Daily, a pro-democracy newspaper. He was sentenced in February to 20 years in prison, which his family and legal team call a defective life sentence. He's 78, for goodness sake. Hong Kong has dropped from 18th, which was pretty good, pretty high, when the British handed over Hong Kong. They had to hand over Hong Kong under a century-old agreement in 1997 so it was 18th in the Freedom Index, 18, you know, in 1997. And now it has dropped to 140th, which is pretty close to the bottom since the handover from the British consul. So, did the 2019 protests lead to lasting civil rights? Sadly, no. On Freedom House's five-year scorecard, Hong Kong has gone from 43 in 2021 down to 41, then in 23, and now 24 down to 40. It's not a dramatic drop, but it's a slow, slow grind, which is what we see across the world in many countries. Sometimes a crackdown isn't an event. As I said, it's a slow, slow thing. And so, to one possibly flickering light in our journey across the globe. And this, yes, it's definitely, I think it's more than a flickering light. Hungary. For 16 years, it was run by Viktor Orban, who described his aim as the leader and leader of the country. In his own words, his aim was to build an illiberal state, a state that did not have the standard freedoms that we expect in New Zealand, a state with limited civil rights. Independent media was squeezed out. Judges were brought under political control. Now, Hungary, of course, is not the only country to have judges under political control. We can discuss that. I'm sure we'll discuss that in future programs. And in March 2025, this is a year ago, there was a law effectively banning pride marches backed by facial recognition. You turn up to a pride march, we've got facial recognition that can nail you. But guess what? The pushback. Roughly 100,000 people did exactly that. They turned up a few months later at the biggest pride march in Hungary's history. It'd be one of the bigger ones in the world, I would imagine. And then this year, the beginning perhaps of a new dawn, and you might be able to hear my smile. In April 2026, Hungary held an election. Donald Trump backed the incumbent dictator, sending his vice president, J.D. Vance, to Hungary days before the election to rally support for Orban, the dictator. Orban, the dictator, lost comprehensively. Peter Magyar and his Zitzar party won a two-thirds majority, ending 16 years of Orban rule in the highest turnout election since Hungary's return to democracy. Magyar has pledged to restore judicial independence and roll back the state capture Orban has built. And with that majority, he actually has the numbers in parliament to do it. What also is happening, of course, is that his election will unlock billions of euros in the EU. Hungary is a member of the EU, but of course had been kind of like pushed aside because of its government at the time, because Orban was not talking to and not working with the EU. He was working more with Moscow. There seems to be a genuine chance of real structural progress here. They're winning the election and dismantling 16 years of entrenched machinery are, of course, two different jobs. And we'll be watching that. Hungary scored a high 90 out of 100 on Freedom House's ledger when Orban first returned to power in 2010. By the time he'd been kicked out, it was 65, had fallen to 65. And that's where Magyar, now he's got to try and pull it back up. And we ask why the president of America, whose leaders call their country a beacon of democracy, the leader of the free world, gold standard justicism, we ask why the leader of America would want to interfere in a nation as an election, a nation's election, by backing a dictator who is limiting civil rights. Our crusades will be strong and stand with thee. So when the altar So where does that leave us? During the last 50 years, there has been real hard-won progress in the advance of civil rights and in understanding and recognition, appreciation of diversity and acceptance of diversity. But for the past 20 years, we've seen drifting backwards across the world. And such drifting is supported by the three major powers at the extremes of the left and right ideological spectrum. Not a comfortable note, but an honest one. If there's a thread connecting tonight back to previous episodes of Echoes of Dissent, it's this. Civil rights, the right to vote, the right to go about your daily life, the right to complain about the government, the right to be treated as an equal, irrespective of gender, race, ethnicity, partner, the person you love. Civil rights aren't really granted from above. They are claimed loudly by ordinary people who've decided they're not going to be quiet about it. 100,000 people marching in Budapest, or a crowd in an airport terminal singing a song about a 200-year-old revolution. And so to Aotearoa New Zealand, where do we fit? Freedom House puts us equal second in the world, 1 point behind Finland and right next door to Norway and Sweden. Steadily, during the 20 years that the global average has been sliding, New Zealand, Aotearoa New Zealand has been steady. And here's an example of why New Zealand is still up there. When ACT tried to redefine the Treaty of Waitangi through the Treaty Principles Bill, Parliament threw it out, 112 votes to 11, after the largest public submission process on any bill in this country's history. That's the system doing exactly what it's supposed to do. That is listening to the people sing. But, and there is often a but on this show, we have an election in November, and the major and minor parties are beginning to drip feed their promises and their policies. One major party, likely to become part of a coalition government, irrespective of which side, which of the major parties wins, wants to restrict the vote in general elections to citizens only. It sounds quite reasonable, but it also sounds very familiar to what's happening across the Pacific. But that would end voting rights for permanent residents. People who live here, work here, pay tax here, raise kids here, some of whom have been eligible to vote since 1975. New Zealand is currently one of the only five countries in the world that lets non-citizens vote in national elections. Voting to citizens only would take us off that list of the only five in the world that provides this freedom. One of this particular party's prospective MPs also wants to be Minister of Broadcasting so he can get rid of the independent, publicly funded Radio New Zealand. Now, I have to say, these are policies. These are ideas coming out from political party. They're not legislation. They're not bills. They haven't been put to Parliament, but they're being floated out there for people to think about, and maybe this is going to get us a few votes. So this MP wants to get rid of the publicly funded, apolitical Radio New Zealand. We hesitate to think what he would do with Access Radio Network. That's this radio network that is for this station. The same major political party also wants ministers to be able to directly interfere with and control the apolitical public service. Now, yes, we have our complaints about how public service works and how this ministry works and that. There's always. But in the vast majority of cases, their public services do a tremendous job and they're toiling away. They are governed by or managed by a CEO who is accountable to government for implementing government policy. CEO doesn't do his job, they find another one. But what this party is looking at is going, we want to go back into the ministry and forget about the CEO. We want to particularly direct people within that ministry. That is dangerous because it limits the accountability. So such policies as this, getting rid of a radio station because they don't like it very much and they think it's a bit left-wing, limiting voting rights to citizens only, and interfering with ministries on the public service on a day-to-day basis. Such policies are framed as restoring a basic democratic principle. But this is exactly how it all starts. Hungary's press restriction started as media accountability. Hong Kong's national security law started as stability. The Save America Act, which is stuck in the Senate, thank goodness, but it does have baby brothers and sisters in lots of different states. The Save America Act, discussed in a recent episode, is framed at protecting democracy. It limits. It makes it harder for some people to vote. A right that can be quietly narrowed for one group is a right that is never solid for the rest of us. 99 out of 100 for New Zealand, Aotearoa New Zealand, is a very good score, but it's not a guarantee. For many, it has been hard fought. Women's right to vote in the 1890s. The gradual legal and cultural changes that have seen us as a country become more tolerant of difference, ethnicity, religious or faith, gender choice, more accepting. But we know there are still community, religious and political leaders who wish to foment division. To those who wish to limit our freedoms and the freedoms of our neighbours, our communities and the people down the road, the people that catch the bus, the people in the traffic jams, the people in the supermarket. To those who wish to limit our freedoms, history tells us that the freedom you take away so easily today will become the freedom your children will be fighting to regain tomorrow. That's Echoes of Dissent for this week. I'm Frank Carter. This has been Civil Rights, here today and sometimes gone tomorrow, quietly gone tomorrow. Catch the podcast anytime on Access Media or your go-to podcast platform. Next week's track, Common People by Pulp, when we look at protests against tourism. Why are some local residents in Italy firing water pistols at tourists? And we ask if there can be a fair trade.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.